Information, please. Presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts and enjoy a glass of refreshing Canada Dry ginger ale. Every Tuesday at this time, Canada Dry provides a panel of four experts for you to try to defeat. If you can manage to send in a question that they cannot answer, you will not only please a lot of people, but you will gain besides. Here's the way it is done. You may submit from 1 to 3 questions with the correct answers. For every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $5. And if your question stumps our board of experts, you not only get $10 more, but in addition, you receive a complete 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Mind you, this is only if your question stumps our board of experts. Our editorial staff may reword your question a trifle. Don't worry about it. Whenever there is a duplication of questions, the information please uses the one that was submitted first. All questions become the property of Information Please and should be addressed to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. Or if you live in Canada, Canada Dry, Toronto. And now, before I present Mr. Fadiman, I would like to introduce Mr. Martin Lewis, Associate Editor of Radio Guide Magazine.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. I'm here tonight to present to Information Please the Radio Guide Award for the Outstanding Program of 1939. Mr. Fadiman, I am happy to have this opportunity to express the appreciation and thanks of the millions of listeners who each week are delighted with the graciousness with which you handle your experts. Marvel at the vast fund of knowledge contributed by John Kieran. Welcome the puns and charm of Franklin P. Adams. Enjoy the remarkable musical ability and wit of Oscar Levant. And appreciate the opportunity of meeting outstanding personalities from week to week. Radio Guide also desires to give recognition at this time to Dan Golenpaul, who created Information Please, a program which has set a high standard for all radio entertainment. We wish particularly to give credit to Canada Dry, who has respected these high standards and done everything to maintain them. Mr. Fadiman, will you therefore accept this plaque on behalf of everyone who has contributed to the success of Information Please, Radio Guide selection as the outstanding program of 1939?
Thanks very much, Mr. Lewis. Thanks to you and for your magazine, Radio Guide. And all we can say is to assure you that we'll do our best to continue to try to entertain all our friends each week. And now, Information Please continues on its happy-go-lucky, unpremeditated, and completely unrehearsed way. Our board for tonight includes our brace of steadies, Franklin P. Adams, conductor of the Conning Tower in the New York Post, and as trusty a brain truster as ever came our way, and John Kieran, the sports writer that I'd rather have with me on a desert island than a lot of books, which is my idea of a loosely constructed sentence, by the way, Mr. Kieran. And as our guest tonight, we welcome back first our friend, Carl Van Doren, whose Benjamin Franklin is one of the most distinguished biographies of recent years. And to brighten up the panel for the studio guests, and I hope for all of you listeners, that charming and dutiful screen star of The Three Musketeers and Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm, Miss Gloria Stewart. To our listeners, we say, remember, for each question that's missed, Canada Dry rings up $10. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the latest edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica. We're on. The first question comes from Mrs. Harold E. Kerner of Eastern Pennsylvania. Very simple. You're asked to do a problem in simple arithmetic, using numerals which occur in the nursery rhymes to which I will refer you. Take the number of blackbirds baked in a pie. This has to be done mentally. You got the number of blackbirds baked in a pie, Miss Stewart and gentlemen?
Mm-hmm.
Add the number of people who were going to St. Ives. That's a tough one. Got that. Multiply this sum by the number of little kittens who lost their mittens. Just the kittens. Leave out the mittens. Just the kittens. Got that now? Finally, subtract the number of hairs required by a barber in making a wig. And one of you must give me the correct answer. Let's see. Mr. Van Doren and Mr. Adams both had their hands raised. Mr. Adams?
I think it's 41.
Well, you can do everything but count, Mr. Adams. How do you make it? Take the number of blackbirds baked in pies.
I got 2 dozen there.
Yeah, 2 dozen. 24.
24.
Yeah, call it 24. Add the number of people who are going to St. Ives, mate.
I thought that was 7.
Ah, I see. That's where you went astray. Mr. Van Doren, how many were going to St. Ives?
Well,
remember it?
Not now.
Karen? I thought he was going with a dozen wives.
No. That's just a wish fulfillment on your part, Mr. Kent. As I was going to St. Ives, I met a man with seven wives.
That's what I... Didn't you say seven?
Yes, I met a man. I was the only one that was going to St. Ives. Remember that old catch?
Yeah, eight.
Yes, we learned that. 24 then, 24 blackbirds. Add the number of people who are going to St. Ives. One person, that's 25. Multiply this sum by the number of little kittens who lost their mittens. How many?
One.
No, Mr. Kieran. Three little kittens lost their mittens. That's 25 times 3, 75. Subtract the number of hairs required by a barber in making a wig. Miss Stewart, do you remember that one?
That I don't know.
4 and 20, that's enough.
4 and 20, that's enough, Mr. Van Doren. That's right. We take 24 from 75 and we get...
In a hurry?
51. 51. That adventure, says Mr. Kieran. 51 is the right answer, Mr. Adams. And not 41. That means Mrs. Turner, for propounding a very amusing question, gets $10 instead of the encyclopedia. Thanks. The next question...
That's the difference between my guess and hers.
Yes, you Arthur Bennett...
I'm the guest star.
Arthur Bennett of this city sends in the following question. Name the plays in which the curtain rises on the following settings. And I'm going to make it easy for you. These plays all won Pulitzer Prizes. Now, the first setting on which the curtain rises is a row of tenements. You have to get all on this. There are three. You have to get all on them. A row of tenements. Mr. Adams had his hand up first, and Mr. Kieran. Mr. Adams.
Street scene.
Street scene. By whom?
Elmer Rice.
Yes, won the Pulitzer Prize in 1929. Quite right. In the second case, the curtain rose on a saloon. A saloon. Mr. Kerr, you know what a saloon is? Mr. Adams.
Anna Christie.
Anna Christie is quite right, Mr. Adams. Eugene O'Neill's play won the prize in 1922. Waterfront Saloon, Johnny the Priest's Saloon on the New York waterfront. The third is a tough one. The curtain rises on a room in a country house at Avenue A and 91st Street, New York City. Now, all of these plays were later transformed into movies. So those of you who go to movies or act in them, as Miss Stewart does, might possibly have seen them in the movies, if not the plays themselves. That's a rather tough one. I'm sorry, gentlemen. It's The Old Maid by Zoe Akin, taken from the novel by Edith Wharton, and which won the prize in 1935. We were supposed to get all on that, as I said. That means, despite the yeoman work of Mr. Adams, we lose $10 for this Canada Dry going out to Mr. Arthur Bennett. Not an easy question. Now we have to get two... Now we have to get all on this one. This comes from O.J. Greasard, New York City. And I'm very glad to get another question about arithmetic. Is that all right with you, Mr. Adams? Another question about arithmetic?
It's all right for the person that sent it in.
We shall see. We may disappoint you yet, Mr. Adams. Name the three parts that are involved in a problem in division, in multiplication, and in subtraction. Now, you learn this at about the age of 10 or 11. That ought to make it rather easy for Miss Stewart, but rather tough for... Mr. Adams has his hand up.
In division?
In division. The three parts involved in division.
Divisor?
Yes, what is the divisor?
You asked me for the three parts. The divisor, the dividend, and the quotient.
And you don't know what they are.
The quotient's the answer.
The quotient is the answer. The dividend is the number to be divided by the divisor. However, you're quite right, Mr. Adams. All I ask for is the name. I don't expect intelligence in addition. I just want you to give me the names themselves. Now, in multiplication, Mr. Adams again. There's a theme of this.
The multiplier,
right.
The multiplicand.
Right.
And the product.
Very good, Mr. Adams. Very, very good.
Just yesterday.
Well, it's almost as if we've never gotten out of school. And how about subtraction? The three parts and subtraction. Mr. Adams, I'm depending on you. How about it?
I know two of them.
All right, let's have the two.
One is the subtrahend.
Yes.
And the answer is the remainder.
Yes, and you take the subtrahend.
And the one
from,
on top?
What is that?
I don't remember.
Oh, can't any of us give us the one on top? You know the little number on top is always a little bigger than the one that goes below it?
With luck.
Not always.
Might have a minus.
Yes, you might have a minus, but we're not going into higher mathematics this evening. Lower mathematics is enough for Mr. Adams and apparently for the rest of you.
Subtrahend is such a nice word.
You want to stick with that for a little while? Subtrahend, subtrahend.
That's brood over that top one.
All right. But the answer is the minuet. The minuet. Well, we got 8 parts out of 9 on that. And I hardly feel that we should stump you. What do you think, Mr. Adams? Let it go?
I let it go.
Oh, right. Very good. 8 out of 9. Very good
indeed. I've made them.
Tough question. Now, the next question is a musical question which you have to answer in the absence of our musical expert, Mr. Levant. This is sent in by L. Peters of Denver, Colorado. Our studio pianist will play a few bars from songs that suggest important events likely to make the headlines during 1940. As you know, ladies and gentlemen, this is a forward-looking program, and we are not in the recapitulation business, as all our competitors are this week. We're going to talk about things that are apt to make the headlines during the next year. You're to name the events suggested by the few bars from these songs, and there are four parts altogether. Have to get 3 out of 4. Very good. Haven't finished yet. Mr. Chair, have his hand up. I put those two little melodies together, and you get what event that is apt to happen, apt to make the headlines during 1940. Mr. Kieran, I had a feeling you were right somehow. You didn't say anything, but I had that look in your eye.
I was going to answer the first part, and then he was playing the second, and I missed that second part, although it sounded familiar.
Oh, you know what it is. Want to hear it again?
Hi, ho, something.
Let's have that again, the second part. That's the first part. The second part, you know it, Mr. Stewart?
No.
The second part is come to the fair.
Oh, yes.
Yes, well, would be what?
Spring is, we'll see the fair open again.
Yes, but I really gave it to you, Mr. Stewart. Don't you think so? Yeah. The World's Fair will reopen May 11th, 1940. God willing. And the second set of musical selections. Now, listen until they're all finished, if you don't mind. One wrong. There are three parts to that.
There are three parts of which I know the first and the last, but not the middle.
Well, now maybe you can get some one of your friends here on the same board with you to give us the middle part. The first part is what?
There's a song in my heart.
I don't think so.
Oh, now, no, wait a minute. That's that Donkey Serenade.
Yeah, Donkey Serenade.
Donkey Serenade.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the last one is, it'll be a hot time in the old town. Oh, maybe a political...
Keep going, Mr. Kieran. Keep going.
Right there,
convention.
Attaboy, Mr. Kieran. Yeah, convention. Not a bridge convention either. Presidential convention, of course, in 1940. The second part, by the way, was Pink Elephants. Does that make it clearer? We wanted to represent the Republican Party this evening also. Donkey Serenade, Pink Elephants, and there'll be a hot time in the old town tonight. All right, we'll call that right. Now let's have the third. Wait a minute, Mr. Adam. Now, the first part of that, Mr. Adams, was what?
I would think the whole thing would be Social Security.
Yes, good enough. That's right. Will you explain your answer? That's quite right.
No, I just got the first part, and I just vaulted into the rest of it.
It did very well. It's a nice vault, really. Very, very good vault. How about the second part? It was Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? Mr. Kieran, you want to explain it for us?
No, I was just going to say I could if you need it.
Go ahead.
I mean, I could spare the dime, but no more.
Yes, the old age pension being paid out for the first time, starting, as a matter of fact, started, wasn't it, yesterday, January 1st, 1940. All right. The fourth and last part of this. How about that? Three parts of that in scaring.
Looks like the Yankees will win the pennant again.
Good enough. I think you're going a little too far. Shall we merely say there will be a World Series and that probably the Yankees will participate this game?
No, I'll go further and say the Yankees will win a World Series again.
People are listening to you, Mr. Kieran. People are listening to you. All right, 3 out of 4. We were required to get only 3 out of 4. A very interesting question, if I may say so. The next one coming from Mrs. John F. Regan of Larchmont, New York. Oh, gentlemen and Miss Stewart, I haven't finished with your childhood yet. Who are the authors of the following very well-known books and stories? We have to get 3 out of 4 on this. The first is Beautiful Joe. Beautiful Joe. Mr. Adams.
I think it was somebody named, began with O. Something like Ogilvy.
That's a good name. Ogilvy. You know, I'm trying my best to make Ogilvy sound like Marshall Saunders, which is the correct name. I just can't do it, Mr. Harris.
Well, I never read it. My sister's read that book.
His sister knew the man, too.
Well, how about Black Beauty? Mr. Adams, I'm going to try Mr. Adams again on this.
That was written by Anna Sewell.
Yes. May I remind you that last week, Mr. Adams, you said that in your boyhood, every house had copies of Black Beauty and Beautiful Joe, and you never noticed who the author of Beautiful Joe was.
No, I never looked at the book.
You never
read the book?
Oh, you just had it in the house. Mm-hmm. Well, we're all right on Black Beauty. Now, how about Pinocchio? Who wrote Pinocchio? Mr. Van Doren.
Collodi,
yes. Italian. What was his real name, do you know? That was a pseudonym. This isn't really part of the answer, Mr. Van Doren, knowing the name of Carlo Collodi.
Funny
good enough. Carlo Lorenzi was his real name. I don't know why he changed it to Carlo Collodi. And fourth, who wrote Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm? Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm. A book that we've all read and enjoyed, various forms. Mr. Adams?
Alice Hegan Rice.
No, it's the other one, Kate Douglas Wiggins.
She wrote something.
Yes, she wrote something, but it wasn't Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm.
She wrote Mr. Wiggins of the Cabbage Patch.
I hate to remind you, Miss Stewart, but you remember you acted in Rebecca of
Sunnybrook. Oh, no, I'm so ashamed.
Oh, that's all. It was a nice job of acting and a terrible job of remembering. Well, we got only two out of four on that, which means that Mr. John F. Regan, courtesy of Canada Dry, gets $10. Now, an inquisitive glance into the till reveals the fact that so far, Canada Dry has paid out $30.
Boy, how the money rolled out.
And now a moment with Milton Cross.
Thank you, Mr. Fadiman. Tonight, I'm going to address these few words to one special group of our listeners, the unmarried ladies. I suppose it's no news to you that 1940 is a leap year, that blessed 12-month during which you may be forward without being considered indelicate. In short, 1940 is open season on the unfettered male. Now, here's a bit of strategy you ladies may use in your plan of attack. Add sparkling Canada Dry water to your leap year campaign equipment. You'll find that any man worthy of capture is so fond of this excellent club soda, he'll be lured toward it immediately. Thus, his defenses weakened by the prospect of tasting his favorite thirst quencher, he may be taken prisoner without a struggle. Canada Dry water is not only a good practical way to get your man, it's also good psychologically. For the young lady who keeps plenty of sparkling Canada Dry water on hand would obviously keep an economical home. For an unfinished bottle may be recapped and its contents saved in a sparkling, lively condition for as long as 24 hours after the bottle has been opened. So, ladies, begin the year by stocking up with Canada Dry water. And on behalf of Canada Dry, I wish you a happy and lucky leap year.
This excellent advice was given in exactly 76 seconds by Beatrice Fairfax Cross. And now, before we go on to the second part of the program, I should like to make a special and very brief announcement, which I make in all due humility. Last week, we had a question which we asked the experts to name three plays or novels in which no women characters appeared. And Mr. Adams, who was almost always right, said Eugene O'Neill's, what was the play?
The Emperor Jones.
The Emperor Jones. He was wrong. In the operatic version of The Emperor Jones, I believe there are no women characters, but immediately after the program, we got a call from a lady who said that she was sure there was a woman character in the play version because she had acted the part herself. And that was Miss Kyra Markham. And that means that a week late, $10 and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica is going out to Ethel Stockton of Corpus Christi, Texas, who sent in that question. Information, please, is honest to the end. Now, the next question, coming from Dubois Rossbacher of Westfield, New Jersey, is about poetry and about ladies. Name the poet and quote a line from a poem dedicated to the following girls. There are only three of them. The first is Althea, A-L-T-H-E-A. The second is Helen. And the third is Olga. A line from a poem dedicated to Althea. Ernest Sheeran.
Stone walls do not a prison make, nor iron bars a cage. To Althea from prison. Isn't that it?
That's exactly right. Who wrote it?
Suckling?
No.
Lovelace.
Mr. Van Doren and Miss Stewart and Miss Adams all said Lovelace. Yes, Lovelace and Suckling are continually mixed up, and boy, do they hate it, both of them. That's right. The famous poem to Althea from prison. Lovely poem, and perfectly nonsensical as far as the content is concerned. The poem dedicated to Helen. Oh, there are three hands raised, Mr. Van Doren.
Well, there are lots of them to Helen, but the one I think of is Foe.
Yes? Can you let us have a line from the famous poem to Helen by Edgar Allan Poe?
Well, famous lines is, of course, the glory that was Greece and the grandeur that was Rome.
Yes. How does the poem begin? Do you remember? Mr. Adams?
Helen, thy beauty is to me.
Yes.
You like some Nicene
bank
bark of yours.
Nicaean.
Nicaean. I think Nicaean.
N-I-C-A-E-A-N.
Yes, I think that makes it Nicaean, doesn't it?
Well, we might say Nicaean.
Huh? How about compromising, gentlemen, on Nicaean? That's quite right. And now, finally, a poem dedicated to Alga. To Alga. Mr. Adams.
You mean that little thing of mine?
That's right.
I didn't think you'd remember it, Mr. Adams. A long time ago. Will you recite that little thing? Doesn't remember it.
I like little Alga.
Love her.
I love little Alga. Her pleasure's so warm. And if I don't see them, they'll do me no harm.
Very good. And that poem is dedicated to...
Miss Nethersole.
Miss Alga Nethersole, apparently a playwright of some reputation before Mr. Adams wrote about her. The next question comes from Hubert W. Horn of Washington, D.C. Very interesting question. Bet you get it wrong. Give the date of the first day of the fourth decade of the 20th century. The 20th century, Miss Stewart and gentlemen, is the one we are now living in.
Of the fourth decade?
The fourth decade.
The first day?
The first day of the fourth decade. And no guessing. There's only one possible answer. Now, Mr. Kieran and Mr. Adams both have their hands up. Mr. Kieran.
You mean on what day of the week it'll fall?
The date of the first day.
January
1st. Oh, no, I don't care about what
January 1st, 1941?
Well, you're just 10 years out.
10 years.
January 1st, 1931.
Yes. Why didn't I call on you, Mr. Adams?
You didn't see me.
I did see you, but you had your hand up the same time as Kieran. January 1st, 1931. Not January 1st, 1940 or January 1st, 1930. That's going to cost Canada Dry $10, owing to the impetuosity of Mr. Kieran.
I was close.
Yes, just a decade out. Just a decade out. I'll explain that to you, by the way, after the program is over, Mr. Kieran.
Explain it to me, too, will you?
And, Miss Stewart, I'll explain it to you after the program is over. I'll see you after the program is over in any case, Miss Stewart. The next question from H. Edwina Connell of Nutley, New Jersey, is about famous quotations from equally famous documents in American history. I'm going to give you a quotation. Quotations from three famous documents, and you're to quote the most famous passage from the same source. This isn't very easy. Have to get two out of three on this. The first quote is this. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. It comes from a document we're all familiar with. Give another quotation from that document. Who had his hand up? Mr. Kieran.
I think that is the Declaration of Independence.
That's absolutely right, Mr. Kieran.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union and so forth.
How about that, Mr. Van Doren?
That's the Constitution.
Yes.
That's right. Yes. I can give that, too.
Go ahead, Mr. Kieran. I think you can say
it. It becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bonds that bind them to another. Something in decency with regard to the respect of the world commands them to give a reason for that.
That is approximately correct. Very good. Now, here is the next quotation. Quote, fondly do we hope, fervently do we pray that this mighty scourge of war may speedily pass away. Mr. Kieran had his hand up again.
Second inaugural address of Abraham Lincoln with malice toward none and charity for all.
Yes, with firmness in the right as God gives us to see the right. That's quite right, Mr. Kieran. And now, finally, they tell us, sir, that we are weak, unable to cope with so formidable an adversary, but when shall we be stronger? Mr. Kieran.
Patrick Henry.
Patrick Henry, yes. And can you give another quotation?
Give me liberty or give me death.
That's right. Forbid it, Almighty God, I know not what course.
And it isn't true that he said that just after being married.
And why do you mention it, Mr. Kieran, if that isn't true? In that same speech, by the way, he said, the battle serves not to the strong alone, it is to the vigilant, the active, and the brave. And I bring that up, by the way, Mr. Adams, because there was a little quotation which I've just been looking up, coming from your facile pen. And based on that quotation, as follows, the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, but the betting is best that way, says Mr. Adams.
I didn't say that.
Didn't you say
that?
Said
by Mr. Hugh E. Keogh of the Chicago Tribune years ago.
Really? Well, they credit it to you, Mr. Adams.
Well, I say it all the time.
The next question, coming from G. Bryce of Chicago, Illinois,
is about utopias. What is a utopia?
Sure. Utopia is an ideal state as outlined long ago by Moore, the English...
Utopia means no place.
Utopia means
political
no place.
Economist.
Yes. Now, who arrived in Utopia after being marooned by a mutinous crew? Who arrived in a utopia after being marooned by a mutinous crew? Miss Stewart?
That an Erewhon?
No, that is a good utopia, but unfortunately it's not the answer to this particular question. It's a hard question, and the only one who might conceivably be expected to know the answer is Mr. Van Doren. Sorry, Mr. Van Doren.
I don't know.
It's Gulliver. Gulliver was marooned by a mutinous crew and landed in the land of the Houyhnhnms.
Well, that isn't a utopia.
Well, I'd call it more or less a utopia.
Well, I knew that, but I wouldn't call that a utopia any more than I'd call this room.
Well, it's arguable. We only have about 20 seconds to argue it out in.
Well, then we'll decide it my way.
All right, we'll decide it your way. Who arrived in Utopia after a prolonged sleep induced by hypnotism? Sorry, it's the hero of Edward Bellamy's Looking Backward. And who arrived after an airplane kidnapping? Sorry, it's the hero of Lost Horizon. Well, gentlemen, I think $10 goes out to Jim Price, courtesy of Canada Dry on that one. A rapid calculation reveals that Canada Dry has lost, well, $50 plus 5 cents of the current Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, before I give you the lineup for next week, Mr. Cross has a suggestion to make.
During this year, resolve to buy plenty of Canada Dry ginger ale. Believe me, that's a resolution that will pay you real dividends time and time again. You see, Canada Dry ginger ale is an all-occasion drink. You will find it goes well with meals. So serve it when guests come in, for everyone likes its delightful bouquet, its mild, mellow, and delicious flavor. Pure Jamaica ginger, choice spices from the four corners of the world, and carefully selected ingredients, all expertly blended under a secret formula that has never been duplicated. This is the reason that Canada Dry is so good. So good for you, and famous in over 50 countries as the champagne of ginger ales.
Miss Stewart, Mr. Van Doren, Canada Dry thanks you for coming down with us tonight. Next week, we'll have our three regulars, Mr. Kieran, Mr. Adams, and Mr. Levant. And we're delighted to tell you that we're going to have the pleasure of welcoming as our guest, Miss Edna Ferber, whose best-selling books are so numerous and so well-loved. Remember, send your letters with questions and correct answers to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City.
Your neighborhood stores have Canada Dry ginger ale and sparkling water in convenient sizes for every occasion. The 12-ounce medium-sized bottle sells 3 for 25 cents, plus bottle deposits. And remember, too, you'll find Canada Dry ginger ale and sparkling water at clubs, restaurants, hotels, and wherever fine beverages are sold. This is Milton Cross saying good night for Canada Dry until next week at this time.